like to call the October 3rd, 2018 meeting of the Board of Library Trustees to order. Let the minutes show that John is not here. He's away in Boston. His mother is ill, so he won't be here this evening. There are no public speaker cards, as I understand. Is that old true story? Okay. Library unions. We have one of you union here today.
I'm a union here.
Okay, Ms. Mullarkey, we'd be delighted to hear from you.
That's okay, I'm a union, but we try to speak with as much as possible a unified voice.
Great.
And tonight I am here to speak to you about the big excitement in our union land, which is that on Friday we reached a tentative agreement with the city on our contract. Mm. And yesterday held a ratification vote amongst our members, and our members, I think most of you who are here know, unanimously approved that contract. So it is slated to go to City Council with Councilmember Hahn and her colleagues on October 16th, and we are really hopeful that that means it will be in place by the time that the current contract expires on October 20th, which is the first time in many, many years that we're going to have a new contract at the expiration of the old contract, which is very exciting. I don't know if you all have heard much about it. I did bring a summary of what the agreement is for you all to look through. I'm not going to go point by point through all of them, but there are about five things that I think are going to be of particular interest to the library, so that I thought I'd share with you what they are. The first thing, and this was a really big issue for us, is that the term of this contract is going to run for 20 months, which is sort of a weird amount of time to run, but that is the amount of time it will take to bring us into alignment with our sibling chapters, the clerical maintenance chapters, so all of our contracts will be expiring at the same time. So we think there are a lot of efficiencies to be had in bargaining as a whole, and of course as a union, we feel like there's a lot of strength to be had in coming to the city together at the same time. So that was a really big priority for us, to get realigned. We've gotten misaligned at some point, and now we are realigned. As I understand it, both IBEW and Local One are also aiming for a similar expiration date, so it's really going to be the time if that happens in June of 2020, which is really exciting. End of 2020. Further down this page, there you'll see there is a new education fund, which is in addition to the education fund that's already offered by the city. The current education fund offered by the city is a tuition reimbursement program at $250 a semester, and is limited just to Peralta College and a certain number of offerings there. Representing the community services unit, we have a very diverse member base. We have both the lowest paid employees in the city and the highest paid employees in the city in our chapter. And as you can imagine, that means that the Peralta offerings are going to be really attractive to some people who don't already have professional degrees, but of less interest to people who do. So like our psychiatrists might want to take classes that are not offered by Peralta in their continuing education. And this new fund allows our members to take advantage of these dollars to get ongoing continuing education at any accredited institution. So that's really exciting to us. I know as librarians, we often want to do things that are beyond what Peralta is in a position to or has as a mission to offer. So this is going to expand the offerings for our members, which is really exciting. Two down from that, the bottom of the front side is the Sanctuary City Training. This has been a big priority for us as a union to think about not just what it means to show up to work in a place that's safe, but also to be part of a city that's a really progressive, forward-thinking city. And Berkeley is a sanctuary city, which is exciting. We're proud of that. We don't feel adequately prepared as frontline staff in a lot of places to respond to that. And so this provides for mechanisms for all workers, whether they be in recreation programs or in mental health programs or in the city clerk's office or the library, to be a place where we are fully trained to respond appropriately as sanctuary city workers. Something we're deeply proud of, and we want to get right, and this helps us do that. And then on the back, two things. At the top of the page, there's an agreement that lifts the wages of the bottom end of our earning classes to the not quite living wage. We are
one penny off
living wage. So, yeah, we are one penny off the living wage. I'm not sure why it wasn't authorized to go to 1801, but it wasn't. And as a union, that means we get to go out there and say, we don't pay a living wage. And so, you know, I guess we'll use that in our talking points. But it does represent a significant pay increase from $16.45 an hour to $18 an hour for the pages in the library specifically, who have not been paid the living wage at this point and will be brought up to the living wage. This also affects a huge class of our workers in the recreation department. So this was a big win for our members at the bottom end of the pay scale. We were trying really hard to get stuff for folks at the top and the bottom of our pay scale. And then the other thing that's sort of been my pet issue throughout these negotiations, right below that, the city name badges. This is another one of those common good proposals that we just think it's really good for the world to be advancing progressive values and to be bringing these issues to the forefront of the conversations that we have with the public and amongst ourselves. And so as a result of these negotiations, every person who works in the city of Berkeley will be now in a position to have their chosen name and their gender pronouns listed on their identification badges. This is a particularly important thing for trans and non-binary people to be able to have who they are in their real lives reflected in the way we identify ourselves to the public and not be called by names that are now dead to them or names that are not really accurate. So we're pretty proud of that, and it protects our members as well as starting an important conversation with the public and letting the city workers do that. So there are other things on here. I'm happy to answer questions if you have questions, but those are the highlights that I think hit the library the hardest, other than, of course, the wages piece of it, which you can see is probably pretty predictable because it matches what happened in the other chapters, so hopefully that's not big shiny news there.
Go ahead.
I have one quick question.
Sure.
On the back page, the last flexible schedule, family-friendly, environment-friendly workplace, it says grievable provision that puts burden on city to prove business reason for any denial of flexible work schedule.
Yeah.
Would you mind putting that in context for me?
Sure. This doesn't come up quite so often in the library because flexible schedules are, so I'll set the stage. There is a provision in our contract that says that people may request a flexible schedule, i.e., 40 hours over 9 days or 40 hours over, 8 days, or to work, a split shift or whatever, in order to, for family reasons or for environmental reasons or whatever. But the city can simply say it's required, it had been required, only that they seriously consider that, not even that they have to answer it, which, as you can imagine, you're in a department that doesn't have a great manager, could be taken advantage of. In the period between our last negotiations and this negotiations, the city itself passed an ordinance, a family-friendly and environment-friendly workplace, which required this of all businesses doing business in the city, that if somebody wants a flexible schedule, they have to give a business reason why if they don't approve it, which is not something we've ever had in our contract. So when we came back to the table, we said, hey, why doesn't the city of Berkeley do as well as it requires the businesses doing business in Berkeley to do? And that was agreed to. So it means that if you work in finance and you want to work, 10-hour days over 8 days and take every Wednesday off, and they say, no, you can't, they have to say, why not? They can't just say, nah, they have to say, no, because you're the only one who's here on Wednesdays and we need somebody who can run the reports that are based on whatever, whatever, and so we're denying your request. So they just have to give a written reason for why not. It tends not to come up in the library, I think, because flexible scheduling requests are not as common in the library. We're on a 7-day operation. There are lots of business reasons to deny a request in the library. More so than in other city departments that don't have public service demands, but it would be applicable to us as well if people request them. Does that make sense to answer the question?
To a certain extent, but that's okay. Applicable for there, for here.
Yeah, it is.
For now.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is a contract wide provision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I make sense, so hold on.
Back to work. Comments from the Board of Library Trustees? Anybody have anything to say this evening, Sophie?
Well, I'm sorry that Andrea left, because what I wanted to say after her presentation is that one of the nice things I think about Berkeley is that there's a very respectful relationship between labor and city manager and the council, and everyone has to advocate for and weigh the concerns that they are there to represent, but it's generally done in a very respectful manner. Mm-hmm. And these, obviously, you know, wages and working conditions and the basics of a labor contract are, you know, the main dish of what we deal with. But a lot of these other things, like the education fund, the sanctuary city training, the city name badges, these are things that the unions bring to us. These are their really good progressive ideas about how to make the city a better place for people to work, but also how to respond better to the people we are seeking to serve. So I just wanted to say that this stuff comes, a lot of this comes from, most of it comes from them.
Great.
And they really, we have a strong unions that are well represented by incredibly thoughtful and articulate people. And it's just a pleasure to see what comes to us in that process.
Great. Thank you. Judy, any comments to make?
No, I don't guess.
No? Okay. Amy?
I only want to say that in reference to our previous meeting, that I just was really impressed by Isabel's presentation about the homeless outreach efforts that the library is going to be providing and helping to connect the services with the people who need them. And I just was really pleased to hear that. I think it's a great idea.
Great. Thank you. I don't have any comments. I may make a comment later on at the Urban Library Council conference report. The consent calendar. Move the agenda. Does anyone want to?
I'll move as presented.
Okay. All in favor of the. Whoops, we better have a second.
Oh, somebody else second.
Please. I'll second.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I did have a question that Elliot answered for me by email, but I thought it might be interesting for others. And that was on item, was it D?
Yes, D.
Item D.
Do we need to pull it from consent?
No.
Okay.
No.
The question related to was there a I'm paraphrasing. The question relates to, is there a cost associated with staff attending the all staff meetings? And the answer is
the extended extra late time.
So we open, what the process is we open an hour later. Mm-hmm. However, that is to enable staff to attend the meetings rather than having the library opens. Were the library open, all staff who were working that day would be unable to attend, especially because we have five facilities. So those who are working on the at the time of the meeting are expected to attend. And those who are not scheduled to work may either flex their schedules if they're full-time, or if they're part-time, can take extra pay. And so there is a marginal amount of cost associated. However, this has been done for many, many, many years. So there's no expected change in how much we would be expected to pay. And the number of people who attend who aren't scheduled to work is rather small, maybe 3 to 4, I think, we estimate, that attend who aren't scheduled to work. So I think I provided an answer that also describes, well, why can't we determine how much the costs are? And that's because the category that we use on the payroll, on the time cards, is the same that we use for additional pay at other times. There are many opportunities for part-time or 20-hour, 30-hour workers to take extra hours to fill in shifts when there's illness or when there's vacancies or when somebody's on leave. So it all gets grouped together, and the overall annual costs associated with additional pay do not anywhere come close to how much vacancy savings we have. We do track that on a quarterly basis to sort of reflect and ensure that there isn't any aren't any oddities over the course of the year. But compared to the amount of the costs associated with either vacancies, filling in for vacancies or filling in for leaves, this is really, really, really rather minimal. It probably would be less than 1%.
So negligible, if anything.
Negligible.
Right.
And
you.
No change from previous years.
Okay. Thank you. Any other quick inquiries?
I have a question, although it may not be the right time for it, so just tell me if it's not.
Okay.
Regarding the staff, all staff meetings, mm-hmm. are board members allowed to attend?
Indeed. We've had, we've invited board members in the past. We may have missed one or two where we just neglected to do so. However, we like to invite minimally one individual per meeting. John was invited to the last time, he had not attended. I'm not sure who has attended.
I attended one, and I think John did, so it's probably
so
June,
the,
Amy and Sophie.
We can look at the schedule when the next one is, and you know what we could do is Eve can send out something to the board identifying who is available for which dates.
Let's do that.
Like
okay.
Let's do that.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that the consent calendar be accepted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Walter, give us a safety committee report.
Yeah.
So you all know Walter?
We do now.
Yeah.
I like the little Lego man.
Good evening. For those who don't know me, I'm Walter Johnson. I'm the senior building maintenance supervisor for the library. I work on the central location. We will be doing a report on the safety committee. And on today's presentation, there are several topics that we will touch upon. As you see on the screen, the roles and responsibility of the Berkeley Public Library Safety Committee, the area safety monitors, the Central Library Fire Drill, and Safety Solidarity Wednesday. And the purpose of the safety committee is to regularly bring staff and management together in a cooperative effort to communicate and to promote occupational safety and health in the workplace. It's a joint effort to detect and correct workplace hazards, reduce injury and illness, prevent fatalities, and increase safety awareness. The third component is the committee is visible and approachable for safety and health concerns, suggestions, and problem solving. The committee consists of staff and management personnel from each of our units. The agenda and safety topics for the agenda and topics for discussion, we encourage all those, the safety committee members to submit topics and participate in discussion of those topics during our meeting. The safety committee members, there are 12 members, and like I said, they are from each division in the library, and like I said, we encourage them to participate fully. Area safety monitors, ASM is our acronym for it. The area safety monitors, members of the BPL Safety Committee serve as area safety monitors. They assume leadership role in communicating safety information. They provide leadership in the event of emergency or accident in their designated areas. Each area safety monitor was issued personal protective equipment, PPE, what we call OSHA. And that Danielle is holding some of that now. That is a green high visibility vest. And also she has a hard hat. And the reason these items were issued is so that they could be, the ASMs can be easily identifiable for first responders, staff, and patrons. Some of the responsibilities are listed. They are listed on the screen. I won't go through all of them, but I will touch upon some. I think one of the main components is to identify hazards and unsafe acts for corrections. Another component I think is important, they all are important, but these are some of the highlights, is to direct safety efforts in the area, including evacuating employees and visitors. Provide communication at their designated assembly area, meaning once we have an evacuation, whether it be fire or some other hazard, earthquake, or whatever, we have an assembly area that everyone gathers, and the ASMs are responsible for, on their way out of the building, to grab the emergency backpack, which includes materials such as water, snacks, just items to get, just in case we have to be out an extended period of time. Those items are included in the emergency backpack. So area safety monitors are responsible for, when they get to those areas, to take a roll of who's there so we can know what employees are there and go through that list. Our next slide is the Central Library Fire Drill. We have a pre-scheduled fire drill scheduled for October the 15th. This fire drill will only be for the Central Library itself. Once we conduct the fire drill for the Central Library, then we'll go out to the branches and we'll conduct fire drills at the branches. But the one for October 15th will be just for the Central Library. The drill is expected to start from approximately 11:15 to 11:45. That'll be before we open. And they say, why now? The fire drill will allow the area safety monitor to evaluate the post-drill criteria listed below. And putting this together is a coordinated effort between the library, the City of Berkeley, which, as you can see, we've got special guests here. The city manager plans to participate, D. William Ridley, Kevin Walker from the City of Berkeley HR, and T.O. Dumleo from the City of Berkeley HR as well. They all will be participating in this fire drill. It will be a coordinated effort with the Berkeley Fire Department and the Berkeley Police Department. Once the fire drill is finished, there are some post-drill evaluation criteria that we as area safety monitors will be evaluating. And we will use these criteria to evaluate the process of the drill, just to get an idea, because this is the first scheduled one that sort of been constituted by the Library Safety Committee. So we want to go through and see what we got right, what we didn't get right, what can we improve upon, and continue to try to schedule these on a quarterly basis from this point. The next slide we have is Safety Solidarity Wednesday. I have some items. As you can see, I'm wearing a safety lanyard. I'm gonna pass these out. I got some for y'all too. So we would like y'all to participate along with us. Working with the City of Berkeley, I'm only actually on the City of Berkeley Safety Committee as well. And what I do, I attend those meetings every second Wednesday. And we go through the agenda, determine safety concerns, and then I bring those back to our, to our in-house safety committee. Mm-hmm. And we try to come up with something that was visible, that we can have everybody participate in. And what we decided to do here at the library was to do the safety lanyards. We gave these out to all employees, our staff members at the library. So every second Wednesday, as a show of solidarity, we all gonna be wearing safety lanyards. And so I'm gonna give y'all a couple of some to participate as well. To keep those in mind.
Goes with my age jersey.
He knows that I'm in on Wednesday, so he'll be checking on me.
All right.
Thank you very much.
And for those who might not have an ID card, we have another little trinket here that we passed out. Wristbands.
All right. Thank you.
So yes.
Fashion coordinated.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
A couple different items that you can wear for safety solidarity events. Now as you can see, the lanyard, the wristbands, the high visibility vest, they're green. Mm-hmm. That color was chosen because of the, like, exactly what it says, high visibility. It's been determined that you can see the green farther than you can the orange and yellow vest. And so if the City of Berkeley Public Works, their uniform now have this mm-hmm. color mm-hmm. in it. And so our employees, our staff will be wearing these on every second Wednesday. And we encourage y'all to wear them as well.
Thank you. It is the second Wednesday, isn't it?
Hmm? No, this is the first Wednesday.
Yeah, the City of Berkeley Safety Committee meets every second Wednesday. Our committee at the library meets every third Tuesday. And we welcome everyone to participate.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. That's an encouraging report, and I'm really glad that the safety committee got reconstituted and that there are so many members on it. Amy?
I want to ask Walter, so it sounds like the fire drill, you said it's before the library is open, so there will be no patrons in that one.
Yeah, it was intentionally done that way. Because, like I said, it is the first one with the newly constituted safety committee.
That's wise.
We want to make sure we get all our ducks in a row first.
Before but do you think you might do one?
Yeah, I think.
Later on?
I think with discussion with management, we've been kicking that idea around.
And how about the other branches?
Once we do Central, then we're going to move over to the branches. The area safety monitors, they went through a training process. Mm-hmm. The first session of training was just for people that's on the City of Berkeley Safety mm-hmm. Committee, which I attended, and then sort of trained the trainer. So I came back and we trained all our area safety managers. And most of the people on our committee, besides library management, are from the branches. So they have been trained, and we will have drills at the branches as well.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else?
Thank you. Thank you, Danielle.
Yes.
Very excited.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is a quick report that I gave about the Urban Library Council convention that I attended in Baltimore. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of things. I think I said last time that I thought it was one of the best organized conventions I'd ever been to. And the whole point of the convention was, in this day and age, this time in libraries as they are, particularly in working collaboratively with so many different agencies in cities and even state and city agencies working together, that it's time for us all to reach out to new and different groups forming and to make decisions in groups that include many, many viewpoints, even others than our own. And I think it was a point well taken that if we surround ourselves with people like us, it's very hard to make creative, forward-thinking decisions. And it's only when we work together in groups who are going in the same direction but may have slightly different viewpoints that we begin to hear things that really make us think outside of the box, and think in new and creative ways. So that, for me, was the main point that I took, and that I think many took. And I find myself still thinking of it almost every day. So it was a great conference, and I'm glad I got to go, and I hope I get to go again next year, actually. All right, organizational review or report?
As I think you all know, they have provided a draft report to me, and then it's time for me to take a look at it and do the work of reviewing it and providing any feedback that's necessary based upon fact, based upon ensuring clarity. So the plan is for them to attend the next BOLT meeting and provide an overview at that point.
The report just came in late today, didn't
it? Yeah,
I know on
late.
Monday it hadn't come yet.
Yes,
so.
Indeed.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that report in November. And there will be
the
people
idea.
From the firm, actually,
that's,
here to answer questions.
I haven't received confirmation yet.
Okay.
But we will be, hopefully, before we do the set agenda.
Okay.
For next
great. Well,
meeting.
We're really looking forward to that, particularly what they have to say vis-a-vis BOLT and its process of going out looking for a library director. So that is to come. Monthly report.
I'd like to point out a couple events
ahead.
That were really, really vital. The city of Berkeley has dedicated is dedicating a lot of effort to bridging the digital divide between people with high incomes and people with lower incomes or less access for whatever reason to technology. And one of the ways that we've done that is to partner with a number of organizations, including the city's IT department, but also some nonprofit organizations, Healthy Black Families, Black Girls Code, the City of Berkeley's Black Infant Health Program, and Berkeley City College, all attended and were collaborators in a tech fair that was held in mid-September. Over 300 people attended, which was really, really, really amazing. It was a collaboration between the IT department and the central support unit to coordinate this. It was held at the central library in the community meeting room. We did have a table where we were able to also provide all kinds of information, and we had one of those big ProWise screens that showed Canopy kids, so we were able to also accentuate library opportunities and programs. There was a lot of excitement, and it sounds like they want to do it again. So we're looking at the costs associated with and the opportunity to do it again, because there's clearly more need. So the opportunity to get a computer that you can have at home and use it costs a lot of money to start, and if you're on a lower income. That can be a challenge. So we're happy to provide that kind of support, in addition to providing people the opportunity to use our computers in the library and our laptops. Yes?
Is there any consideration of partnering with some of the tech firms where maybe we could get equipment as donations?
No. Alicia, that's...
The nonprofit that we work with is called Tech Exchange, and it's based in Oakland, and their mission is to do exactly what Elliot said at the beginning, is to provide free computers for folks whose incomes prevent them from purchasing their own home computer. They receive donations from businesses, local government. In fact, the library is preparing to donate some of our used computers to them. So the computers that were given to individuals were given by Tech Exchange. And that's what they do, part of the organization, whether or not they're giving out free computers, is they're taking those donated computers and rebuilding them in terms of, you know, making sure they have, you know, all the basic system requirements, RAM, hard drive, and putting new software on there, wiping clean any, you know, private data, conference data that may have been on the computers from the organizations that donated them. So that's part, that's a big part of what, you know, goes into providing a free computer. So I think as far as the library is concerned, our role was more as a host and a coordinator in terms of some outreach to local organizations and working with Tech Exchange, which was a really great experience. So that's kind of their expertise, and they've got the whole infrastructure set up to get those donations.
So yeah, I mean, it's a great example of the library being a trusted community place and organization that somebody like Tech Exchange would see the library as the perhaps one of the best ways to ensure access. Yeah, and you know, this is something that we perceive as a key element of some work that we did called the Edge Initiative, which is a ULC initiative. The Edge Initiative is an initiative to compel and to encourage libraries to consider equity-based issues around, and other issues around ensuring people have access to technology, and encouraging people to be libraries to be creative and collaborative in developing solutions to whatever their specific community issues are. So it's also about ensuring that as we do strategic planning, as we do prioritization, we are thinking about technological needs as well as other community needs. So we're really happy to we are perceiving this as part of our drive to fulfill some of the needs that we identified in doing the Edge work over the last 2 years, and we're hoping to publicize it in with ULC actually, because they do a monthly newsletter on Edge initiatives throughout the country, and we perceive this as a real opportunity to also model for other libraries.
Well, I was amazed that in that day you gave away 125 computers and had a waiting list for 70 more.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's just stunning.
The line went all the way down Kittredge Street from the beginning of the entrance to the library. At one point.
Great.
It was systematic because they have to let they have a system where they give people, like, groups of 20, like a little, you know, booklet that they have to go through the different areas of the fair, and then when they've got all their stamps, then they go out and
get their computer. Great.
So that was great to see, and I actually heard from, you know, personally from a couple people who were just very excited by that experience themselves of having, you know, participated as a person getting a computer.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Does the Tech Exchange also provide tutorials?
That was part of the, yes, that's part of what they do, is they give them a sort of an overview to the people before they get their computers. So this is what the computer is going to look like, and you know, these are the applications, and we also, they have, they invited Comcast, and they also provided information from AT&T about low-cost home internet access plans, which do have eligibility documentation requirements, you know, the CalFresh card or public housing documentation, a few other possible, you know, pieces of identification. And so that information was also there, and if people couldn't at that time provide the documentation, we could still get the process started and do the verification part later. And those internet plans start at $10 a month. So that was the other aspect of it, was to let people know that you don't have to pay, you know, if you qualify, you don't have to pay $90 a month for internet access.
And do they provide classes?
Do they provide classes? I don't know that they provide.
They did that day.
Classes. I think their focus really is on giving away the technology. I think they do point of service classes. They do have they're in the process of moving into a new facility, and I think when they have that new facility, they'll probably do more programming like that. They've been operating sort of at more of a warehouse-type space, so I think that they're looking to expand their operations in that regard. And the library does also offer, you know, computer classes, and you know, both library-sponsored. And for example, here at South, every week I think there's a drop-in coding club.
So, that's what I was asking.
And that's also part of the EDGE initiative, is to look at ways to increase programming in that area.
Absolutely.
Great. Thanks, Alicia. All right, anything else? Thanks for highlighting that, Elliot. Agenda building for next month. Obviously, the organizational review report will be on the agenda. It's time for Bolt to elect a new president and vice president, so that will be on the November agenda. Anything else? Sophie?
At our last meeting, I had suggested something for an agenda, not realizing that our next meeting was a week, you know, 2 weeks later. I'm wondering, I'd like it to move ahead, but I don't know if it's going to be too much.
Let's put it down.
Well, it's this idea of starting the conversation about, actually not even starting the conversation, starting to educate ourselves about what the different options are for a good process do an executive search. And I had suggested that we should invite the SEIU and ask them what their ideas are for what a good process would look like. That we would invite possibly the city manager and the head of personnel. You know, my idea was that maybe the two of you would just talk about what resources in the city, who might like to talk to us about that. And really the idea is to be educated about what does a really good search look like, what are the resources that the city has and the library has to do that, and you know, what elements would folks like to be considered in as we start putting together a process. And I think it would be great to have public comment on that item, so that you know, we could have a presentation, we could have people who actually are invited to speak, but then we would also just hear from anybody who wants to chime in about what they think.
It's perfect timing for that, because so, hopefully the organizational review will feed right into that.
And again, I just want to be really, really clear. It's not what would make a good library director, and it's not who do you want, or whatever. It's how do you do a good search? Because I think that process has not been as transparent and thorough as it could have been in the past. And so I think it's worth us having a process about what the process is going to be. And because I think there will be many steps, I was hoping that we could go ahead and start with that just kind of information exchange about how these things are done.
Great. Judy?
Yeah. I have one concern about that right now at this point. I would hope that, one, we would hear from the firm during the organizational review. Two, we could digest it. And then three, look at how the organizational review would help us move forward with that process. I think the firm that does the review might be able to help us with that. I think just to receive a report and then jump right into what would be the process for a search, I think at this point is a bit premature, because it feels like to me, we're receiving the report, okay, we're done with that, now let's move on to the search. Which, it's just been my, it's just been my experience that that would not be the most beneficial course of action.
I think we are
anxious to get a new person named and in place. However, I think sometimes we move too quickly, and I think that's what's been problematic in the past. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't do it. I'm saying we're just a bit premature at this time, simply because with the organizational review, usually a firm is very helpful in saying, as you move forward, these are some considerations you may want to keep in mind. That, to me, would be a wise course of action rather than next month, let's hear what they have to say, okay, now let's get ready for a search. I just feel that it's a bit premature at this point.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Anything else for this meeting?
We will be needing to set budget priorities as we move into the process of developing the biennial budget. And what has been done in the past in the fall before moving forward with that is that the director has made proposed budgetary priorities for discussion by the board and evaluation and updating. And so I'm planning to do the same.
Okay.
I have also been starting discussions one-on-one with some of you about some of the prioritization work plan work that we're doing mm-hmm. that could help feed into that. I know I've spoken with you, Diane, mm-hmm. and we had a meeting, and I plan to do the same with each of you to help sort of set that up.
And with that, Elliot, can we sort of get a calendar?
We can provide what we're sort of looking at over the
years, so we know how quickly we have to get up to speed on each of those things. Good. Okay, so you'll be meeting with each.
I think that would be a good thing to help prepare for this.
It's very important. Look at the old priorities, what the city's priorities are now. Just sort of.
I encourage you also to look at the 2 years ago in November to see the example that was done prior. That the board did for the previous biennial 2016.
Okay, thank you.
Diane, Sophie.
Sophie.
Sorry, thank you. I think it's great to get going and have a lot of sort of a long ramp for the budget process, especially since so many of us are new. I think last year we talked about. We may have forgotten and dropped it, but we talked about putting together this timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's complicated because you are setting a budget for the next year, you are updating this year's budget, you are closing out last mm-hmm. year's budget, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. you are making adjustments based on projections and adjustments based on actuals and all those things kind of overlap, and I think it can be quite confusing. Like, what are we doing? Are we updating last year's projections? Are we making projections for next year? I think it would be very helpful if we, sorry. I know you have it all in your head. You have like this big spreadsheet in your brain, but I think it would be great for, if that could just be something that was included, if there's time to do it,
I guess that makes a lot
and kind of maybe show those three tracks, like what are the things that we do with the budget that's closing out, how does that project into the current year, what are we doing with the current year's budget throughout mm-hmm. that year,
mm-hmm.
and then what are we doing when we're looking at that prospective budget for the next year, and actually we budget in 2 year increments, so. There's also this updating process that is a biannual thing that makes it even more complicated.
Yeah.
At least I finally figured out that we had all three things going on simultaneously. But I really think that that'd be helpful. The other question I had is, usually we don't budget without updating the strategic plan, and I just wanted to, if you could refresh my memory,
right,
where are we in the strategic plan cycle?
Exactly, and that's one of the things that's really, really vital, and I'm glad you brought that up. The strategic plan went through last fiscal year, and the city of Berkeley, I think, as you know and I've described it, has done a proposed strategic plan, and it has been my perception that there's a lot of good content in that strategic plan. And so what we've been doing in the library, with the lack of a strategic plan for the department, is to identify collaboratively the elements of those strategic plan that are the most relevant for library services. And they were three things: maintenance and providing excellent facilities, promoting racial and social equity, and thirdly, the provision of excellent, and maybe I brought it, no, I didn't, of excellent service. Very, very broad. These were the three that our library council, which consists of really our lead staff, our supervisors, our senior librarians, and our managers, collaboratively identified. And then we've been developing a work plan around those, identifying key initiatives, projects around those three things. Not that everything falls so neatly, not that it's comprehensive.
So you have a working strategic plan that isn't necessarily an official strategic plan?
The city's strategic plan, I imagine, is an official one,
yes,
but not a separate departmental strategic plan. Rather, what we've done is identified the elements of the city strategic plan that seem to be the most key for the work that we're doing.
And why are we not pursuing our own? Is it just that it got broken in the many changes?
I think if we were to have done so, we would have done so around the time that the previous
director.
No, I mean, that would have been the time that we would have done
it. Disruption?
I think it was the disruption.
Yeah.
And it may be a sort of positive thing that we didn't at that time move forward with something during the very disruptive stage. My perception is that there's a lot of great work that was done by other city departments that really does seem to be relevant for our work. And what I've done is I've started sharing out some of those. I think, Amy, you had a chance to see that when I met with you, and I'm happy to share those with each of you as I meet with you over the next few weeks.
As having that
would
guide
the
budget. So it would be great for that to be included.
Absolutely, absolutely.
In light of, and I think you're being quite wise in aligning our strategic plan with the city's strategic plan, what do you anticipate, practically speaking, a time frame for us doing a strategic plan? Because it seems like to me, here again, if we're going to be doing an executive search, it is not wise. It's just been my experience having been an executive. It is not wise usually to have a lot of stuff going on with strategic planning, budget, work plan, and aligning a lot of your organizational management team in that process. It's just too much. And priorities and accountabilities as well as attributes get confused with all of those processes going on. So in light of that, what do you anticipate being a strategic planning process, and for how long? Because we're talking basically 6 months to a year. I don't know, but what do you anticipate?
It's a fair question, and I suppose that I perceive it the following way. Were I a director to coming into a new organization, which would be more effective, me coming in with a 3 to 5 year strategic plan that I had no influence over or ability to help design
shape
and shape and understand the community through the process of developing the strategic plan, that would be a real opportunity lost for somebody orienting themselves to the community, because a huge part of a strategic plan is the key informant interviews, the focus groups, the identification of key partners. So that's been what's colored my perceptions of why it would be not wise to move forward prior to the selection of a director. And so I don't know what that timeline is. And I think that in place of that, this will be an effective way to develop a work plan around something that is aligned with the same vision of, mm-hmm. of service.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
That's very helpful.
Okay. Before we adjourn, I'd like to remind you that next month's meeting is not the first Wednesday in November, it's the second Wednesday in November because of CLA, so don't appear a week early. Come the second week, please. And don't forget the big celebration this Saturday at Central as they celebrate the opening of the Commons from 2 to 4. It's going to be a big and fun event. Be there. All right. Anything else for the good of the order? The meeting is adjourned.